Greetings. Greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. That's right, it's the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. It's the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do help focus you on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. And today we come to you on what is popularly known as Easter Sunday, known amongst conservative Christians as Resurrection Sunday, and known around the McBurney compound as Sunday. And so if Easter Sunday is a big deal in your life and at your church, it's a sign that your life and your church is probably not fully aware of who you are in Christ. Because if the resurrection isn't something that comes to your mind daily, then you've got issues. And if you feel like you need to set aside a day once a year to celebrate the resurrection, I just feel sorry for you, that's all. You might want to check yourself, and I can help you possibly. Maybe I can't help you. God help you. Heaven help you if you feel like celebrating the resurrection on Easter Sunday one day a year. All right, so enough of all that. Let's go from there immediately into the Aliens file. That's right. That's right, we have a headline from the BBC, which is a legitimate news source. The BBC, you see the byline, you see BBC, you see the byline of a reporter. It seems like smart people, the British Broadcasting Company. It's been around since broadcasting, and so it has an air of legitimacy to it. And when you read the headline, scientists find strongest evidence yet of life on distant planet. And then strongest evidence yet is in quotation marks. But who catches that? The kids, they don't even know what that means, that it's in quotation marks. That means it's probably not true. That means it's an opinionated assertion. But the BBC article goes on. Scientists have found new but tentative evidence that a faraway world orbiting another star may be home to life. Life, I tell you. And so, tentative evidence? Okay, no one under 40 knows what the word tentative means. And so they just continue. A Cambridge team. Cambridge? Those are smart guys. That's Cambridge. Isn't that Ivy League or even more? It's English. A Cambridge team has detected signs of molecules, which on Earth are only produced by simple organisms. Oh, simple organisms produce these. That means there might be some sort of simple life on this other planet. Because if we do find life, isn't it most likely that it'll be some simple form of life? As if there were such a thing. First of all, the average moron doesn't understand that there's no such thing as simple organisms. Organisms are hugely complex. Anyway, let's continue, though, because this is an exciting, earth-shattering, although they have one of these every other week, every other day, every day. Every day in the news, they're discovering the latest discovery on the discovery of something that's earth-shattering. It has something to do with aliens and life on other planets. The BBC goes on to report chemicals associated with life have been detected in the planet's atmosphere by NASA's James Webb Space Telescope. The team and independent astronomers do stress that more data is needed to confirm these results. The lead researcher of the Cambridge team, Professor Niku Madhusudhan. Niku Madhusudhan. Why is the professor's name have more vowels than consonants? I think it's because there are no Englishmen left. So he is from Cambridge University's Institute of Astronomy. And Professor Niku says, quote, "This is the strongest evidence yet there is possibly life out there. I can realistically say that we can confirm this signal within 1 to 2 years." Unquote. That's Professor Madhusudu Sadahara Sura Siddhartha there at Cambridge. And so does anyone understand what the professor just said? No, they don't. So let me explain. He said he can realistically say that we can confirm this signal within 1 to 2 years, which means, number one, they don't know exactly what they're looking at. Number two, they can confirm it within 1 to 2 years based on what? More data that comes in, right? They're waiting for more data to come in. So what that means is this story is completely meaningless. But that's okay. Let's continue. K2-18b is the planet we're talking about. It's 700 trillion miles away. That's right. But the James Webb Space Telescope is so powerful that it can analyze the chemical composition of the planet's atmosphere from the light that passes through from the small red sun that the planet orbits. Okay, just color me skeptical about pretty much everything in that sentence. Pretty much everything in that sentence, color me skeptical. I don't believe any of it. And just because you read it, just please don't believe it. That's all. We have another quote from another doctor, Subir Sarkar. He is a lecturer of astrophysics at Cardiff University. He suggests that why is the professor of astrophysics at Cardiff named Subir? Because there are no Englishmen left. That's all. It's so sad. He's an astrophysics whatever, a lecturer. What is a lecturer? He stands around and shoots his mouth off a lot. What does that even mean? He suggests that K218B could have an ocean which could be potentially full of life. Though I want to caution that we don't know for sure. Really? Subir, you don't know for sure? No way. I thought you lecturers and astrophysicists and researchers and professors, I thought you knew everything for sure. Come on, don't sell yourself short, Subir. You're a smart guy. The team, according to the BBC, the team over there at Cambridge and other fellows over there at Cardiff, they'll all continue to focus on looking for life on other planets. They want us all to make sure we keep our eye on this space. Keep watching this space. Keep watching space. Anyway, so it's kind of sad that you've got basically pagan Indian professors left shoring up what's left of British civilization. And the nation that gave the world the Bible is now squandering itself looking for little green men in space. It's just sad. It's a sad commentary. All right, but let's go. Let's move on because there's other news. We have a report from the CDC. Autism. That's right, autism. Don't laugh about autism. So the decline and fall file, we have a report on autism now. Autism now, a new report. Let's get to it here. A new report released by the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention this month showed that 1 in 31 children in America has autism. So that's great. What's like a math quiz? Just 1 in 31. What does that mean? Sounds like a lot. Anyway, it's about 3%. By the way, Centers for Disease Control, centers is plural, which tells you that they're making it up because nothing has more than one center. Nothing. But except for the Centers for Disease Control. All right. Now, the figures, the new report, the figures mark another increase from the CDC's It's another increase in autism, as you can well imagine. It's from the CDC's latest Autism and Developmental Disabilities Monitoring Network survey published in the CDC's Morbidity and Mortality Weekly Report. What a delight must be to read through that. Yeah, the Morbidity and Mortality Weekly. Anyway, the fact that America has one of those, a CDC, an Autism and Developmental Disabilities Monitoring Network, a Morbidity and Mortality Weekly Report, the fact that America has any of those is further evidence that we have become the Soviet Union. So Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is alarmed, as you can well imagine. He says the autism epidemic is running rampant. But don't worry, he's here to help. That's right. Let's see. This is from Based Underground. Oh, it's the Epoch Times. The reporters go on to say that the CDC first started running autism surveys in children born in 1992. There's been an increase. I think once you start counting something like that, because it's mostly, let me just read from this. It's like counting little green men. There's always more. Every time you count them, there's more of them. The CDC now says the prevalence of autism in boys is 1 in 20. And in California, it's 1 in 12.5. So, yeah, I have to stop right there. If you have a so-called psychological disorder, mental disability that discriminates by like 5% based on geography. No, 30%. It's 30% higher in California than it is in Wyoming. And it's 5% more in boys than in girls. It's double. It's double what it is in boys than it is in girls, and it discriminates based on geography by 30%. I'm just going to say that this is a massively misdiagnosed issue, and it's primarily a hysteria. And children who are disabled or retarded or their brains are injured in some way, I'm sure that happens. But autism in 10% of the kids in California, almost 10% of the kids in California have autism, and about 3% in Wyoming. Okay.
It's burrito, does it?
What's that now? Burritos must cause. Well, don't worry. Trump says by September, we'll know. That's right. He's got a crack team working on it, including Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. says the autism crisis is 1,000 times more threatening to our country than COVID-19 was. And I'm like, wait! You remember what they did with COVID-19? Be careful. Because I know all you people waving your RFK Jr. flags, forgetting that he's a baby-killing, godless communist. Robert F. Kennedy will assume 1,000 times the power of the maniacs during COVID if given half the chance. Right? You guys remember who Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is? Oh, but he's against vaccines. Okay. Fine. He's still a baby-killing, godless communist. A leftist maniac who would murder 1 billion people if given half the chance. That's who Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is. And all right. 1,000 times. Get out of here with that. So Trump says, we're going to know by September what... Trump. This is the same guy who gave us Operation Warp Speed. We're going to cure COVID in less than a year. We're going to have a vaccine against the cold virus. Do you remember? So Donald Trump, by the way, gave us the COVID shots. So just keep that in mind while you're waving your MAGA hat. Bunch of geniuses. All right. Okay. Let's move on to... Oh, this is fantastic. So have I ever told you people that Ron DeSantis gives me the creeps? Ron DeSantis, there's something about the guy. Anyway, something about the guy, something creeps me out. And so he came out, Liberty Sentinel is reporting that he gave an interview with Liberty Sentinel. And he said in the interview that public schools have become indoctrination camps. Good. I agree with that. Uh-huh. And he went on to say he was holding a press conference. unironically, he was holding a press conference at Pensacola State College. Unironically. Criticizing government involvement in education. Does anybody get that? No, I'll just let it slide. The governor explained that the founding fathers never envisioned government would be involved in education at all. So anyway, I don't know that that's true, Mr. DeSantis. In fact, I kind of doubt that's true. I have a feeling that the founding fathers, first of all, they're just not as righteous as any of us have been told. The founding fathers, if given the opportunity, would have acquired for themselves as much political power as they could. There just happened to be a few godly men around who prevented them from consolidating that power. And that's all. It was a bit of a stroke of luck and chance and some factors that came together that divided the powers in America. And it was mostly the fact that everyone in America had a gun and didn't want anyone to tell them what to do. That was the main thing. Otherwise, Thomas Jefferson would have had no problem setting up a government authority over education. Benjamin Franklin, you name it. But there were a few guys like John Adams and George Washington and probably a thousand others whose names I don't know. And just a bunch of armed farmers. They had a rifle and a Bible, and they didn't want to hear from what they're supposed to do. And so that's okay. But DeSantis goes on. DeSantis says there's never been any constitutional basis for I don't like the way the folks here. So it's never been any constitutional basis is in quotation marks. And then the rest of the paragraph, there it's not. So I don't really know what DeSantis said. So but here we have this in he says there's never been a constitutional basis for government meddling in education. So what is Ron DeSantis's solution? Empower us, the governor said. Who's he talking about when he says us? He's talking about the state of Florida. Empower us instead, he said. Give us control of the funds to improve education with more local control. So Ron DeSantis' solution for state-funded education is give him the funding in his state. He'll do it better because, you know, he's a lawyer. Now, the reporter at Liberty Sentinel tucks in this little sentence. While many argue that only families, churches, and the local community should influence education, getting the federal government out of the picture is a positive step in the right direction. That's the reporter at Liberty Sentinel. So first of all, Mr. Reporter, you're wrong to say that many argue about it. Who cares what many argue about? Many people argue about all kinds of things. God says that God doesn't say that families, churches, and the local community should influence education. So I don't even know where you get that. I mean, maybe you heard that at college or something. But God says that fathers bear direct responsibility for the education of their children. That's what God says. And if you break that, you break civilization, right? Because you take from fathers, you take from them the responsibility. One of the major responsibilities that civilize them is their responsibility to educate their children. You take that away from fathers. Now fathers have too much time on their hands to do stupid things, go entertain themselves. Anyway. So let me just let Ron DeSantis know that some of us know, because we've read what God says, we know that handing billions of dollars to a lawyer politician like you, Ron, or anyone who thinks that the state or the community or families or churches should assume responsibility for the education of a man's children, we know that none of that is a step in the right direction. It's the Weekly Worldview, and I am your host, Doug McBurney. Thank you for sticking with us, ladies and gentlemen. I went a little bit long on that opening segment there, but let's keep going with the, that was from the Tyranny of Godlessness file, where you check in with a fellow like Ron DeSantis, who is a godless tyrant, only restrained by circumstances and chance. That's the only thing that keeps Ron DeSantis from acquiring as much power as possible and wealth. And they're all tyrants. All the godless are tyrants. And Ron DeSantis, he wants control of your child's education. That's to you fathers out there. And you fathers, you're not allowed to delegate the education to your children. You're not allowed to delegate the responsibility for the education of your children to the state. I mean, you can do that, but there are going to be significant consequences for that, like the destruction of your civilization. You can delegate the responsibility for the education of your children to your wife. You can do that. That's allowed. But not to the state, and not to the community, and not to the church. No. I'm sorry, that's just not what God says. The church is not for the education of children. That's not what church is for. Okay, let's move on to the sad politics file, where Just the News reports conservative school districts are begging Donald Trump to save them. And I'm reading that, I'm like, conservative school districts? What's that? There's no such thing. But this is how illiterate, how culturally, biblically, and spiritually illiterate most conservatives are, is they think there are conservative school districts. The whole idea is a communist idea. A tyrannical, communist, socialist, Nazi idea. The idea that the state should educate your kids. The idea is antithetical to everything American and godly. But Just the News reports deep blue states and school districts are facing scrutiny from the feds over gender identity, sex-segregated sports, and parental rights, with billions in education funding on the line. Wow. So first of all, Just the News is allegedly conservative, allegedly Christian. They say deep blue states. So that's what they're now calling the fanatical froth-at-the-mouth leftists who want to molest your kids right in front of your face at school. Those are deep blue. Now they're the problem. You know who's the problem? Any Democrat, any socialist, any communist, any heathen, they're the problem with what's wrong with society. But for you to start classifying deep blue versus... No, they're all godless heathens, and they are a threat to your children, and you need to be on guard against that threat. Whether it be deep blue or light blue, it's like the back in the day when the communists were called the Reds and the people started classifying them as pinkos. Well, the pinkos have taken over society because everyone chuckled, oh, they're just a bunch of pinkos at college, uh-huh. They'll murder a billion people given half an opportunity. Okay, but let's see. Oh, this is also very disturbing that now the MAGA crowd and Donald Trump and his minions, they're threatening to take away billions of dollars in education funding from the communist froth-at-the-mouth leftist child molesters unless they stop molesting some of the kids right in front of everybody, because it's kind of disturbing. And so the so-called conservatives are using the leftist machine to their ends now. The billions of dollars that they've been stealing from us in order to manipulate and pervert the minds of children through federal mandated education programs. Now the conservatives are stealing that money to do what they want to do. Nobody's offering to give us the money back. How about you give us the money back? Tell us. The federal government should issue an executive order that fathers are now responsible for the education of their children. Of course, half the kids would be left out in the cold because half of them don't have dad at home anymore.
boy, we're pretty far down the rat hole, I got to tell you.
Let's see. Well, the article goes on here. School districts in eastern Washington are aligned against the froth at the mouth communists in Seattle. And they've asked the education secretary, Linda McMahon. Oh, boy, that's hard to say with a straight face. I couldn't do it. Education Secretary Linda McMahon cannot come out of my mouth with a straight face. All I can remember her is dressed up with the wrestlers, right? With the guy with the paint on his face. And I'm sorry. She's the education secretary. She's the conservative education secretary. Oh, my gosh. That could only happen if a relatively vulgar leftist celebrity became president as a conservative. How could that ever happen? Okay, never mind. They go on to talk about various rural school boards are aligning. Oh, listen to this. The Mead School Board. Mead is a rural, not deep blue. They're pinko or red or what. I don't even know how to figure it out anymore. The Mead School District in Washington is seeking urgent federal intervention as it becomes what they call themselves cannon fodder in an ongoing culture war, risking its federal funding if it follows Washington's order to conform to the state policy on gender-inclusive schools, which is where the teachers are allowed to molest the kids pretty much in public, as opposed to what the conservatives want, which is for them to stop all that, at least like out in the open. Anyway, so the conservative, allegedly pink school district, it says, we don't want to lose our federal funding by going along with the child molesters, but we got to go along with the child molesters because we'll lose our federal funding. We don't know what to do. We're cannon fodder. So there's no such thing as cannon fodder. Nobody has to be cannon fodder. You could stand up and do what's right and say, we're not going along with the child molesters. We don't care how much money's involved. You take all my money, take all my property, and throw me in prison. I'm not going to advocate for the molestation of the minds and the bodies of children in the government schools. That's all. Meanwhile, out in Spokane School District seeking an investigation of civil rights and parental rights violations, asking the U.S. Department of Justice to examine a potential violation of Title IX. This is unbelievable that people can argue from these positions and think they're conservatives. This is a tragedy. This is a tragedy. Letters were made public this month by Defending Education, which recently rebranded from Parents Defending Education. Now they're just Defending Education because why? Primarily, Parents Defending Education realizes that by changing their name to Defending Education, they can better create another 40-year industry bilking evangelicals out of enormous amounts of money, electing politicians, eating a lot of caviar and shrimp and steak and drinking champagne, and never actually standing for the truth. Kind of like what National Right to Life did. Let's raise billions of dollars bilking evangelicals, but never actually advocate for the outlawing of killing children. And they did it successfully, and Parents Defending Education looks at that model and they're like, that works pretty good. The pro-family industry, the pro-life industry, Parents Defending Education have never called. Number one, they've never encouraged parents to get your kids out of the government schools. They've never done that. And they've never called for the outlawing of government education. It should be against the law for the state to take the responsibility of educating your children away from you. It should be against the law. It's ungodly. But none of these people know God, so they would be pretty much clueless. The conservatives are using the leftist machine, and they think that it's conservative. So I'm not sure how we come back from that without... Well, the only way you come back to that is you have to have an epiphany, a conversion. You have to find God. And so that's what we'll hope that they find God. That's why we're here at the Weekly Worldview. We're letting people know that God exists. That's right. And that's just one of the things we do, but that's the main thing we do. And not only do we let people know that God exists, but we also preach the gospel. And so I should try to always have at least one very concise presentation of the gospel in every show. Because if God knew you had people's attention for an hour, he would want you to preach the gospel at least at one point, right? I think. I was just reading an Easter presentation from a popular author. I read the whole thing. It took like 9-10 minutes. Goes on for paragraph after paragraph talking about Easter and Jesus and the resurrection. Nowhere in there is the gospel. So I wrote the guy a letter and I said, hey, next Easter, when you write all this stuff about Jesus, and that's all wonderful, great stuff, the historical Jesus, you can't deny the historicity of the resurrection, goes on and on and on. I said, next Easter, consider presenting the gospel, that in order to avoid hell and to be reconciled with God, you need to trust that by the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus Christ, you can be saved. God is merciful. God is good. Lord have mercy. I wish you would. It's the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Thanks for sticking with us there through the gospel portion. We'll always try to present that at least once. From there, and if you want more information on that, please reach out to us. Reach out. Okay, we go to reason number 1780 to get or keep your children out of the government schools. That's right. Over a dozen small to mid-sized churches in Colorado have joined forces and reached out to some of the largest, most influential churches in the state, asking them to help in their effort to defeat a barrage of radical legislation that is threatening to tear families apart and plunge their state into darkness. That's the state of Colorado. This is from Protestia.com. And just a note to the folks at Protestia, Colorado has been plunged into a state of darkness for quite some time. And it's all orbiting the government school complex. It's all orbiting in the government schools. We have a note here from the pastor at Ridgeline Community Church in Castle Rock, who says we have to fight House Bill 1312, but we need reinforcements. So he calls on the mega churches. Crickets, nothing. The mega churches, they don't get involved in anything like this. And the small to mid-sized churches, since they are relatively biblically illiterate, they're pretty much helpless as well. The primary object of this House Bill 1312 is it's legislation to radically change the way citizens interact with trans people, including teachers with students and parents with their own children. This is a guy from the church who's warning. And then he has some advice on how we're supposed to fight against the state that wants to pass laws about how human beings can interact privately with one another. And here's the thing. Pastor at Ridgeline Community Church. Any church that has the name community in its name, be very suspicious. That's all. Just a rule of thumb. I just want to let you know. But here's the thing. The only way the state of Colorado can enforce their laws facilitating the molestation of children, which is what this is a bunch of perverts
facilitating the molestation of children, and they're passing laws to make it not only legal, but to make it mandatory. And the only way these maniac, deviant perverts can enforce it is if you give the state access to your children. And how do you give the state access to your children? It's in the government schools. So what the pastor at Ridgeline Community, what he should be doing is saying, we need to get out of the government schools. Because it's a bunch of child molesters, obviously, a bunch of perverts. But that would affect the bottom line at Ridgeline Community Church, because having your kids home all the time is very expensive. It means that one of the parents would have to stop working, probably, at least full time. And that could affect the whole tithing algorithm, even at the smaller churches like Ridgeline. Why else would a pastor not shout from the rooftops, get your kids away from the molesters in the schools? You explain it to me there, Pastor Chris Goble, lead pastor at Ridgeline Community Church. How is it you're not telling the parents to get out of the schools? You get your kids out of the schools, the perverts in Denver, they don't have any way to know how you're interacting with your kids. But nobody says get out of the government schools. No, the pastor says we're going to do posts on social media. We're going to preach about it from the pulpit. We're going to preach against HB 1312. And we're going to petition our representatives. Those are the three priorities of the allegedly conservative pastors who are absolutely clueless and helpless. So sad. And they're trying to shame the mega churches. Hey, the mega churches, we all knew they were a bunch of phonies. All right. So anyway, if you have your kids in the government schools anywhere, you're sinning against God and against your kids. And while we do live in an age of grace where God is not imputing sin against you, you're still going to suffer the consequences of your sin that God built into the system. There are certain consequences for sin that are built in. You keep doing it, the world's eventually going to smack you down. And God never, the age of grace does not insulate you from the consequences of your sin. So get your kids out of the government schools. All right. Meanwhile, since it's Easter, and let's go to crosswalk.com, which is just a total phony, baloney, made-up, fake Christian. They have an interview with the stars of the series The Chosen. That's right, an interview with the actors who portray Peter, Andrew, and John in The Chosen. And they say, these actors say, that the series resonates across ethnic and political divides by offering a universal message of hope while authentically portraying the humanity of its characters. Okay, so how diverse is the fan base for The Chosen? Well, it includes people like Whoopi Goldberg, Tucker Carlson, Chris Pratt, and Gwen Stefani. So you can be a God-hating atheist, communist, racist, like Whoopi Goldberg, or you can be a milquetoast Christian, sort of, who just started reading the Bible at age 50, like Tucker Carlson. Or you can be whatever Gwen Stefani is, I'm not familiar, and Chris Pratt, I have no idea who these people are. But so basically, you can be anybody. You can hate God or you can love God, but you'll love this show. And Crosswalk is just all a Twitter about that. They're just loving it. We just love the fact that Jesus appeals to everyone. We have one of the actors who portrays Simon Peter told Crosswalk that we're going for the humanity of these human beings. And it's something that everybody can relate to, he says about portraying Peter. Now, Peter, by the way, is a character in the Bible. If you want to actually find out about Peter, there may be some things you can't relate to, but it's in the Bible. And some parts make you really uncomfortable. Some parts would maybe even make Whoopi Goldberg uncomfortable, if that's possible. The series, just in case you're not familiar with the series The Chosen, the series depicts the followers of Jesus navigating real-life struggles. And one of the stars, one of the actors says, "It's a drama that anybody can enjoy. It's for anyone, for everyone. People of diverse personalities. It's a realistic portrayal of community." Unquote. Wow. Let's see. We have scenes of the disciples, like, arguing. It would be so odd to say, like, everyone must think the exact same way, you know? What, you mean like it was in Acts chapter 2, maybe? Okay. The actors go on to say, by the way, actors... until motion pictures, actors were classified just above prostitutes in the social hierarchy, just so you know. Let's see. We have a crosswalk says it's healthy to see the disciples with a variety of perspectives. One of the actors says, we sort of all need that to make the world a better place. I think people respond to that authenticity of, like, how do I really feel about this? And if I were in that position, what would I be doing? And, like, you might align with this disciple or maybe the other disciple. Unquote. Another actor who portrays John said, quote, I think everyone can see a bit of themselves, not only in the disciples, but in Jesus' message, unquote. So obviously, if you watch The Chosen, the one thing you will not see or hear is the gospel. Uh-huh. Why is that? Because The Chosen is satanic. The devil is very good at hiding salvation, the salvation message, behind religious robes and very appealing religious garb, which is what The Chosen is. The Chosen is entertainment dressed up in Jesus and designed to hide the gospel. It's the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Thank you for sticking with us. It's we're round the third. We're headed for home, and we go to Peter Singer, who is still around. You remember Peter Singer, the child-killing advocate who has advocated for legalized murder for most of his adult post-doctorate life. Peter Singer is now Peter Singer has a podcast, because everybody has a podcast. This is from the Satanic Philosophy File. Dr. Lazzari Radek and Dr. Peter Singer, we're told by the New York Times, are philosophy professors. They host a podcast about what it is to have a good life. And their recent podcast, they talked about Professor Kahneman, Professor Daniel Kahneman, who decided to kill himself, and they praised him for killing himself because he was very old
And so Dr. Is he a Professor Kahneman, Daniel Kahneman, wrote a letter to his friends saying that he has always believed that the miseries and indignities of the last years of life are superfluous and that he was not going to participate. Professor Kahneman said that he decided he had completed his life. Dr. Daniel Kahneman was long associated with Princeton University. And the New York Times says he certainly had accomplished a great deal. And they report that he died March 27th, 2025. So he killed himself. And Professor Singer, along with Lazari Radek, they're teaching people that there's a lesson to learn from Dr. Daniel Kahneman killing himself, and that killing yourself is the culmination of a good life. That's the lesson that Peter Singer takes from this professor killing himself publicly. Publicly writing about it, talking about it, going, doing, showing it to everybody, telling them how good it is. And Peter Singer wants you to know that this is the culmination of a good life, is to kill yourself. So it should be criminal to advocate for suicide. Should be criminal. So Peter Singer should be arrested. He should have been arrested 30 years ago for advocating for the murder of innocent children. Among others, he's since advocated pretty much for the murder, suicide of pretty much everyone, except himself, apparently, at least for the moment. We'll see. See if Dr. Singer culminates his good life with, anyway. So would arresting Peter Singer and putting him on trial and then executing him for advocating murder, would that help protect us from his philosophy? Well, it's a step in the right direction, okay? But the only real protection against such philosophy is godliness. Because otherwise, you might get to the end of your life, and you might think that you have the authority to decide when your life is over, and you might be so weak and cowardly that you're not able to deal with the indignities and miseries of the final years of your life, which Mr. Kahneman may not understand, that a lot of those are designed to teach us lessons that are going to be valuable in eternity. Suffering through the miseries and the indignities of the final years of your life, unfortunately for prideful human beings, they're kind of necessary to get us ready for what's next. We need to be humiliated. And we need to suffer, because most of us have spent our entire lives barely ever being uncomfortable, let alone suffering. And suffering teaches patience. And there's a Bible verse, right? I'm hitting right around a Bible verse. Suffering teaches patience, and we're going to need those lessons when we go into eternity. But Dr. Kahneman doesn't know God, neither does Peter Singer, so they think that foregoing those lessons and assuming authority over the end of their life, they think that's the culmination of a good life, and it's not. They're just evil criminals. Godliness is the only protection, although judicial action against such criminal behavior would also be helpful. Trying and executing Peter Singer is a good start, a step in the right direction. All right. But only believing the gospel and knowing the Bible can protect you against satanic, self-absorbed philosophy like this. All right. A German journalist has been sentenced to 7 months in prison for a meme mocking the government's policies against free speech. That's ironic. You put up a meme saying the government hates free speech, they put you on trial and sentence you to prison. This is from the Decline and Fall file, Germany Has Fallen. That's right, the news editor at Deutschland Courier, The Deutschland Courier faces a hefty fine, 7 months in prison for posting a meme mocking the government's hatred of free speech. The editor there, David Brandels. 7 months on probation. That's right. He could go to prison, but he's on probation. But he has to pay a fine of nearly 60% of his annual income. And if he doesn't pay, they'll lock him up in jail. Why? He posted an image of the Interior Ministry holding a sign that he altered to read, "I hate freedom of speech," satirically. And for that satire, he was arrested and put on trial. The court found that he had committed defamation directed against the people in political life. Which carries a sentence of, yeah. I thought that was the whole point of satire, was that it was generally directed against people in political life. Isn't that like the cornerstone of Western civilization? Oh, I forgot. Germany has fallen. That's okay. We'll see how Islam works out for them. That's next on the agenda for the Germans. Let's see. Mr. Bendel's plans to appeal. He says, "The Deutschland Courier and I personally will continue the just struggle for freedom of the press and freedom of expression, which is indispensable for the continued existence of democracy in Germany." I'm sorry to tell you this, Mr. Bendels. Freedom of expression, freedom of speech, freedom of the press is not essential for the existence of democracy in Germany. Because eventually the people will vote to throw you in prison for offending them. And that's where you are right now. The people in Germany, all these perverts and communists and tyrants, they were elected democratically by a bunch of godless heathens. All right. I don't know if it's the African immigrants who have destroyed Germany, or I don't know who's destroying Germany faster. Is it the Muslims coming in from Africa, or is it the German children just squandering everything their parents built? Anyway, it's a combination, I'm sure. It's very sad to see. From there, we go to reason number 1779, to get or keep your children out of the government schools. A 13-year-old boy shot another student on the playground and then was released to his family after being booked into juvenile detention. So anyway, just so you know, if the perils of the government school hadn't really gotten through to you yet, mom or dad, just know that shooting another student now, it's a relatively low-level incident. Well, the kid didn't die, so they just booked him and let him out. And he just booked into juvie hall. The sheriff's office says there was never a threat to the public. Really? Okay, this occurred in the Seattle area where just living is... If you just live in the Seattle area, there's a threat to the public ongoing pretty much all the time. This was Lakeland Elementary School. Parents are upset they didn't lock the school down, didn't follow the protocol. And so there's a big argument between the parents, the police, and the administration at the school over whether or not there should have been a lockdown before or after the child was shot. Should we have locked down while they were dragging the body into the... The kid survived, fortunately. So when do we lock down? Is it after the gunshots are, don't hear them anymore? Is it after the blood is wiped up? Should we lock down while we're wiping the blood up? So they're all arguing about that. And someone needs to stand up and tell these poor parents, get your kids out of the government schools. Meanwhile, from the Daily Bloodbath file, a Walmart employee in Newton County, Georgia, shot and killed a person inside the store. And then shot another person at the residence. They were all Walmart employees. And, listen to this. The Breitbart reporter says, the violence started when... Dot, dot, dot. What do you mean the violence started when? That's urinalism right there.
The violence, as if the violence was the offender. The violence started. No, how about the maniac killer started shooting because or when or whatever, however you want to report it. The violence started when the gunman and the two deceased were all acquaintances. Yes, yes, yes. Also, there was a mass shooting at Florida State University. And then there was a stabbing at a Texas high school in the bleachers. But we don't have time because, I mean, who has time to report on the daily bloodbath? There's no way you can cover it all. We may return to those stories later. The mass shooting at Florida State University, the stabbing of one, a murder, that stabbed the other student to death in the bleachers at a Texas high school. Who knows? They got into an argument about something silly. He murders the kid. Unbelievable. Meanwhile, from the justice file, Idaho, in the state of Idaho, the governor there signed into law a bill that will allow courts to impose the death penalty on individuals convicted of aggravated lewd conduct with children age 12 and younger. Huh? So it used to be in Idaho that you got the death penalty if you were convicted of raping a child. But now you may get the death penalty if you're convicted of aggravated lewd conduct with a child under 12. Age 12 and younger, I'm sorry. You want to make sure we get that right. The legislation creates a new criminal charge because, yeah, we need that, right? Are you telling me that the people and the government in Idaho didn't know what to do with people who raped kids before, that we need a whole new criminal charge? Oh, I forgot. There's pretty much an industry now around the lifetime processing of child molesters through the system, in and out of the system, in and out of prison. Oh, let's make it a death penalty thing. That'll put people on the payroll for life because it takes 20, 25 years to kill a guy. You can make it to retirement on that in the industry. So this new law establishes that aggravated lewd conduct. Now, don't confuse that with just run-of-the-mill lewd conduct. This is aggravated lewd conduct, and the child has to be under 12. If the kid's 13, well, we're willing to, you know, we want to be reasonable. If you rape a 13-year-old, you really think that we should call for the death penalty? Let's try to be civilized here. Anyway, so if you break this particular law in a particular way, well, the state could bring up, you know, the possibility of an execution, but they're still allowed to make a deal with you. It's not like you have to be executed. It's not like we want to put the fear of God into anyone who would think of hurting a child by making sure they know that they will be executed painfully and quickly. Let's not do that. Let's just put this new wrinkle in the system. We can, anyway, to seek the death penalty, by the way, with this new law, prosecutors must prove at least 3 of 17 specific factors related to the alleged aggravated lewd conduct with a child under the age of 12. If they're only able to prove 2 of any of the 17 specific factors, the death penalty cannot be put on the table. If they're able to prove all 17 of the specific factors, the death penalty may be put on the table, but it does not have to be implemented. So this is all relatively meaningless, except that it undermines justice and it mocks God publicly, which is appropriate in the state of Idaho or any other state these days. Now, see, we have some comments from some Republican and conservative legislators. They say this new law establishes a strong deterrent. He said that, and he was not joking. This is not satire. He actually thinks that's true. The post-millennial reporter says that this law aligns with laws in other states that have implemented stricter penalties for what they call child sex crimes. That's too many words. Too many words.
So anyone convicted of rape should be executed. There, I just said it in a lot fewer words. And that's all the law needs to say, and anything else is superfluous. And what's that now? Oh, I'm sure the law already exists that you'd be executed for rape in Idaho. It's just nobody can find it anymore because it's buried under a bunch of law books. Nobody knows. So listen to what, I don't know, this is the governor. He says, just like capital murder destroys lives. Capital murder? Excuse me? What about just murder? Murder destroys lives. By definition, it destroys at least one. This governor, what are you, a lawyer? Just like capital murder destroys lives, aggravated sexual abuse of a young child devastates victims and families for generations. This guy should be tied up and thrown over the edge of a boat into the... This guy's the governor, for crying out loud. Wow. All right, now I don't want to call for him to be hurt in any way, but he should be driven from office. He should be too ashamed to ever show his face in public again for having said what he just said. All right. So so if this abuse of children devastates families for generations, what the governor of Idaho would do, if he really believed any of that, would be he would mandate immediately that all cable TV and the internet has to all be shut off immediately until we get control of the pornography that's molesting and abusing our children every day. And of course, he would immediately mount a bulldozer and start bulldozing the public schools. But he's not going to do that because he's clueless. The attorney general there in Idaho says, Idaho's children and future generations deserve that measure of protection that this new law provides. And so if your attorney general doesn't understand the concept that anyone who abuses a child in this way should be executed, well, I would just say that Idaho's children and future generations definitely deserve a better attorney general. Wow. That's pretty bad. All right, let's close with this from the criminally insane file. We go to the state of California, which is governed by a criminally insane sex cult and a crime family, as a matter of fact. Out in California, politicians and religious leaders have ordered the phasing out of the sale of gas-powered cars by 2035. By 2035, allegedly, you will not be able to buy a gas-powered car in the state of California unless you buy a used one. You won't be able to buy a new. And listen to this. 35% of all new cars sold in the state of California next year have to be plug-in, zero emission. Now, hybrids don't count. Nope, your Prius doesn't count. No, it has to be either zero emission or a plug-in hybrid, which is means your Prius don't count. Yes. So, and listen to this. For all of you waving your MAGA doji hats, automakers only earn credits. Now, there's a credit program that automakers can participate in. If they want to destroy Mother Earth, they can do that. They just have to pay money. I know. Well, it's a whole religious thing. The automakers can only earn credits toward their mandate by selling qualifying vehicles or... buying credits from Tesla. Tesla. Tesla has lots of credits because they set up the system. Elon Musk wasn't a dummy. And by the way, Elon Musk introduced the hysteric paranoia that has driven the ecological mania that's destroying the minds of children. Elon Musk built it. And he's never repented of it, and he made his fortune on it. He's evil. He's evil. Anyway, the article goes on. Based Underground says, if EV sales continue to falter and there aren't enough credits, automakers will have to pay the state of California $20,000 per vehicle sold for each credit they are short.
Who created this system? Elon Musk. And the criminally insane sex cult that runs California and the religious leaders who have bamboozled all of them. So the deliberate, this is the deliberate destruction of a state by a criminal gang aligned with religious fanatics, right? The eco-fanatic worshipers. So this is the eco-fanatic worshipers. They think they've convinced the government to help them save Mother Earth. But what's actually happening is the Pelosi crime family is simply destroying the oil and gas-based economy because they're invested in the so-called clean, renewable, religiously correct economy. And they don't want the competition. And neither the criminal gang nor the religious leaders involved in the destruction of the state of California, neither of them has a plan for the fact that it won't work and they'll actually destroy the state. They don't care. Because they'll all be behind their gates, in their mansions, when everything comes crashing down. But I'm here to tell you, if they think their gates are high enough to keep the barbarians out, they're wrong. And they're going to find out. All right, that's it for the Weekly Worldview. Should the Lord Terry will return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.